Hi, ladies and gents, and welcome, if you're joining us, to the latest Trinity Tims podcast. My name is James Forrest. I run the site The Celtic Blog, and I'm here with my colleagues Eric Knott, who runs Read Celtic, and Joe McHugh, who runs Video Celts. We're going to have a number of things to talk about tonight. But before we start, we're going to talk about the weekend just past. Coming out of Ibrox, I think it was important that we got back to the level of performances that we'd had in the two games before it. And we certainly did that. We looked back to, if not quite our best, then at least at the level where you could see how we built such a big lead in the title race and became champions. The performances of certain players, I thought, was excellent. There was one suspect moment from Austin Trusty. And Adam Ida generated an awful lot of chatter in the aftermath. But it's goal number 20 of the season. I think he's now on 28 and total, so heading for the 30 mark, which I think is a psychologically important number, especially in that he's achieved it in 16 months. But he continues to get stick and he continues to get criticism. And I think some of us have given up hope that he'll ever not get criticism. Rio Tati scored another excellent goal, and we found out that the manager wants to sit down with him and talk about a new deal, which I don't think any of us expected, because I think most of us thought that if someone was going to go this summer, that that's who it would be. But obviously, Brendan is either rolling the dice on one last attempt to get him to stay, or there is a genuine chance that Rodgers thinks we can keep him and he's got to build a team around him. So I thought it was a lot of interesting stuff came out of the game. The game itself was a straightforward, professional performance that sends us into Wednesday night in a good place. And hopefully we carry that on into the weekend and then the weekend after. But I'm going to get Joe's thoughts on the game and on like some of the stuff that surrounded it, like Rio, the news about Rio. And we'll start, I think, with Big Ida. Joe, big man's got another goal, but he still doesn't have the fan club that he should, in my opinion. I don't know about you. Oh, you.
It's pointless. Ida does his talking on the park. He scores regular goals. I heard on Ascom today or yesterday that he's got a goal every 117 minutes this season. Maeda is 118 minutes. Folk want to take that apart and say he never scored for eight games running. He scored two goals in 5 minutes against Aston Villa. It doesn't really matter. He comes off the bench and scores goals against teams that Celtic are leading comfortably against. So there's no pleasing folk. I don't think Ida needs to do anything more. I think he brings so much to the team. Kyogo and even Maeda playing as a striker, but they're on the shoulder and you've got to be popping balls through to them. But Ida will drop a bit deeper. He'll link up play. He'll get involved. And it's not a coincidence. The team tends to do pretty well when he's playing centre forward, whether he's scoring goals or not. So there's no pleasing folk. If he's a £3 million signing from a Croatian team or a Swedish or Danish team, what would be fantastic. Look at this. How great is this? But I think we've mentioned it every week in this podcast. Michael Nicholson's incompetence is the reason for his price tag, and Hulk will never get rid. They seem to think that if you cost Celtic £9 million, you'd be knocking in 30-plus goals every season. So it's pointless. I don't think there's much more we can say. On the contracts, a pinch of salt time. I think managers just mentioned we're talking to them and I'll be speaking to them, talking to their agents. Right? Maeda, Hatate and Kyogo and Matt O'Reilly all signed new long-term contracts soon after Brendan Rodgers was appointed as manager. So they've signed contracts in less than 2 years. I think Maeda's possibly a special case because he scores goals and there's not many of them around. Hatate is back in fantastic form. There's nothing in Celtic scouting network to suggest that we can unearth the next Rio Hatate. So I would be keeping him, but we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. The Daily Record's got an absolute fixation. Every second day there's some disastrous Kyogo story. Kyogo this, Kyogo the next thing. We're all aware of that. Whether the players want to move on in World Cup year, who knows? If they sign a new contract, they could still be sold by Celtic a year's time after the World Cup. So contracts don't mean that much. If somebody waves £25 million at Celtic, anyone will be sold. So I'm a cynic on most things, but a manager talking about having talks with a player about extending a contract when they've signed a contract fairly recently and they've maybe got 2 years left is... we'll see what happens. But Hatate is in great form just now. The team is in great form. They've got every excuse in the book to wind down, drop down a gear or two. But the form that they were in March was horrendous. It looked as if we were going to stagger to the line. But the team is clearly unrecognisable. It's been five goals. I brought Ibrox. And a convincing 3-1 win over Hibs. So they're certainly back in form. Get two more league matches. And judging by Aberdeen at the weekend, a competent Celtic should be capable of running up 3 or 4 goals at Hampden. If Celtic were to up their game, they could get a little bit more. So but there's no complaints for me over the weekend. Everything went very well. And good luck, Adam. You can score a hat-trick in every game. And there'll be no pleasing some folks. So, but that's a verdict from me. I'll pass to Eric for his thoughts. Possibly.
Can I nip in first? We've gone round and round on Hatate, haven't we? I mean, we really have. I mean, there was a point, and it didn't just seem like that long ago, that we were all talking about dropping him for his own good and dropping him for the good of the team and everything else. But his form in the last few months has been excellent. And he looks again like the player that he was in the first... maybe the first 6-7 months after we signed him, when he just looked unplayable every week. I thought his goal was, I mean, his goal is well taken. It's an excellent bit of football that leads to it, but he's getting in the right places. He's getting the ball in the net now. He looks transformed in the last few months. What the hell's happened to him? Eric, what about yourself?
Well, it's like, I have to agree with Joe. I mean, I don't think it matters what the guy does. That was an interesting stat there about the fact that he has a goal every 117 minutes and Maeda has one every 118. And look, I suppose that stands to reason because Maeda, you know, he's obviously playing a lot more. So it's probably a little bit more saturated for him by that extra minute. But at the same time, I thought he was rock solid again on Saturday. He had that one-on-one chance there where he kind of, you know, he was trying to go for the bottom corner. I think he could have just lifted that and he probably would have got his first goal rather than, you know, the one at just on the stroke of halftime. But again, that was a sublime finish on the stroke of halftime. Put us in the lead. You couldn't ask for much more from the guy. If he's giving a goal a game or a couple of goals in a game, which he seems to have been doing in the last few games since he broke that little duck that he had, he's been scoring goals with ease. So I don't know what more. I mean, I'm tired of having this conversation. I'm tired of talking about it. One of the commenters said there, he does his talking on the pitch. That's all the guy has to do. I mean, if people want to consistently criticize him for his price tag, I just look, let them at it. That's what I say. In terms of the performance on Saturday, rock solid is probably the best way that you could describe it. We conceded early against Hibs, and then took control of the game. I thought the first goal again was well taken by Nicholas Kuhn, who he's come back on form very much since he kind of had that slump himself as well. Then I'd have got the second goal in before halftime, and look, when we came out after the second half, we were just steamrolling forward, and it was inevitable we were going to get that third goal, and which brings us along to Hatate, and obviously the situation with Hatate, who, as you said a couple of months ago, we were tearing our hair out with this guy. But that's the thing with Rio Hatate, that's just the thing with the guy. He's a bit of an enigma. in that regard. He can be excellent 1 week. I mean, he was kind of posted missing at Ibrox. He didn't have a massive performance at Ibrox. And there are the kind of scenarios where you want him to step up and you want him to play that sublime football that he can. And those killer balls, which were, and like those killer balls that he can play, they were in total evidence there on Saturday. And he did quite a few of those. And I just wish that when he's up against it in a game against the Ibrox side, that he could do that as well and do a defense skill pass, you know, or do it more often than he does when in those kind of games. But at the same time, I suppose they do crowd him and they're always all over him in those games. So he probably doesn't get the kind of freedom he would have, or he would like to have, and the kind of freedom that he got in the Hibs game. But you have to look at it from the perspective that we were playing the third place side. David Gray's done a brilliant job. And he's consolidating that third place by the looks of it, because Aberdeen, you know, went to Ibrox and that was a bit of a damn squib from them. And augurs very well for us in terms of, you know, if they're going into Wednesday off the back of a 4-0 loss, it, you know, morale is going to be a bit low. It's a good opportunity for us. It's a dress rehearsal for the cup final. If we win and win well in Pittodrie, it means that we set ourselves up very well for the final at Hampden on the 24th. So, yeah, I think overall, very good performance on Saturday. Very solid. And I would say Adam Ida, I don't think we need to talk about Adam Ida anymore. Let him do his talking on the pitch. That's my view.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That about sums up. That's a hell of a stat, Joe. That he's got a goal every 117 minutes, though. I need to work that into an article sometime over the next couple of days. That's really interesting. I would not have guessed that. I would not have guessed that his minutes to goals ratio is better than Maeda's. As big a fan as I am, I would not have guessed that in a million years. So Aberdeen next, they had a bit of a car crash of a performance yesterday. That may or may not have dented morale. I still think we're going to be on our game if we're going to get a result up there on Wednesday night. But they've had a bit of an up and down season. You never quite know which version of them you're going to get. I certainly didn't expect the version that turned up at Ibrox yesterday. That was dreadful. If they turn up anything like that at Hampden, they will get absolutely done, because we will show no mercy whatsoever. But they can be a very hit and miss team. And the season has been weird, to say the least. The best start an Aberdeen side has ever had to a campaign, and then they fell off a cliff for months and months and months, and then got themselves back where they started playing well again. And I don't know, a couple of games in the last few, they've nobbing at the races. But that performance yesterday was so bad that if they turn up at Hampden even vaguely in that frame of mind, they may as well not even bother getting off the bus. What about you, Eric? How do you think Wednesday's going to go? I mean, do you think Wednesday's any barometer towards, you know, what we're going to see in the cup final?
I don't think it's really, like I said, it's a dress rehearsal, but I don't really think it's a barometer, because it's different. It's a league game. It's a dead rubber. There's we're, you know, they're playing for pride. We're playing for pride. Yeah, they're probably still playing, you know, they're playing for, yeah, they're playing for a European position. They'll obviously want to try and get that third position from Hibernian. So, but based on Hibs' form, I don't know. I don't see if they can actually get that third position, but that's what they'll be pushing for. So obviously a win for them is important on Wednesday night, not so important for us, but in terms of how we test ourselves against them, and what we, you know, it'll give us an indication of what we're going to be facing in the final. But the final is a totally different ball game, as you know. Hampden is totally different, as you know. It's all or nothing in a cup final. You can't sit back and absorb pressure without having to come out yourself and fight. So it's going to be it's a different scenario, really, to the cup final. But it will give us some sort of a barometer about how things are going to go. And in terms of Aberdeen, yeah, you're 100% right. It's been an up and down season. I mean, I was over at the game in October where we drew 2-2 at them, and you know, they looked like a bit of a force. I mean, yeah, I thought at that game especially that Jimmy Thielen had Brendan Rodgers' measure in terms of the way he set up tactically. And they could have, you know, they could have as easily won that game as we could have. You know, we had those chances at the end to win it too, but it was a very close run thing. And I thought, yeah, look, these guys are serious contenders. They've shown up at our back door, you know, on our doorstep, and they've given us a game. They've given us a hell of a game. So I thought it was going to be onwards and upwards from there on. And I also thought that when we faced them in the League Cup semi-final at Hampden, that they would give us a game again. But what that did was show us that they wilted. They completely wilted in a cup game, which is a different scenario. And I think that was the catalyst to them having that slump. They fell, as you said, their form went off a cliff after that game because we absolutely tore them asunder and it seemed to knock the stuffing out of them. So I think the cup final, as you said, if they play like they did at Ibrox on Sunday, we could tear them asunder. So while I'd be wary of them in the cup final, I suppose the be all and end all is what Aberdeen you get on the day. You know, based on the way that they've been so up and down throughout the season. Do I think that we have the ability? We'll have a tough game on Wednesday night, but do I think we have the ability to overrun them at Hampden at the end of the month? I do, because I based that on what I saw there in the semi-final last December, you know, so, or November as it was. So I think if we're on form on the day and we have as strong a squad as we can have out, you know, a strong starting 11 as we can possibly have, they could be in bother. I think they could be in bother. But with regards to Wednesday night, I don't think you can draw a lot of conclusions from what will happen there. It's a different scenario entirely, if you ask me. But they will be going for the win because they need it. So yeah. That's pretty much my view on it.
I just tend to think that their biggest problem is going to be the same problem every side that plays us at Hampden has. The way you play in the league, where you can sit back and try and get a point, just is not going to work in a cup final or a cup semi-final. And that's why Rodgers has never lost a game at Hampden. That's why we're going there really, really confident that we'll get this. But Ian, as one of our guys has just said there in the comments, it could be another 6-0. It could very easily be another real doing that we get them.
Yeah.
As I say, if they turn up and end like Ibrox form, it will be a real doing. And they may as well not bother. Joe, what about you?
Well, I'm just realising Aberdeen have lost 4 goals, 5 goals and 6 goals in Glasgow this season. So if they were to suffer another one at Hampden, it wouldn't be too much of a shock. But it'll be interesting on Wednesday, but it's no reference or bearing on the final. We saw two recent performances against St Johnstone that were chalk and cheese. St Johnstone held us at Hampden for half an hour and then they get hit with something that no team in Scotland can cope with. And I think various managers, Derek McInnes has said it, David Gray said it, most managers said, when Celtic hit a purple patch, when the passes are all flowing, it doesn't just happen by accident. They build up to it, and there can be a period of 10-15 minutes where Celtic are likely to score 4 goals against almost anyone in the league. So it'll be interesting on Wednesday. Aberdeen have got a lot of work to do. Their supporters will not have been happy. They all rushed out and bought their cup final tickets, and then they watched them capitulate in the second half at Ibrox. They would have had reasonable expectations that they'd be able to take something from that match. And so there was the hurt of losing at Ibrox. The reality is that third place is almost beyond them, and they've also got the fear now that they're playing Celtic at home, and in 10 days' time, we've got to go to Glasgow to face Celtic. So, I mean, the other thing, you're talking about Aberdeen being up and down. They had a great start to the season, 12 games or so, since they get hit for 6 in the semi-final. Their form has been between poor and mediocre. They get back. They were on a run of about 14 games without a win, and then they started winning games. But I don't think anybody's been saying they've been playing great football, and look, they're back, and things are back in place. So it's been decent form, but nothing spectacular. I mean, Hibs have been eye-catching. Hibs have had a decent run. They've got a bit of purpose. They've been winning matches. They've stormed through. But Aberdeen, it's been up and down since he went to Hampden, and it'll be interesting. Rodgers has already told the players team for Wednesday night, so I would imagine McCowan and or Bernardo will be starting the match. Yeah. I think Forrest will start the match. If there's any options in central defence, it'll be Scales and Trusty. The fullbacks probably pick themselves as well. So you'd imagine Bernardo and McCowan will be bursting a gut. I don't think there's any chance of reaching the cup final team, but they'll want to impress and they'll want to at least get game time at Hampden. The forwards almost pick themselves. I think Coon is a fair bit ahead of James Forrest based on his performance at Tannadice and his performance at the weekend. James Forrest will be a certain to be involved, certain to come off the bench at Hampden. But I think the team for the cup final is almost settled. Other guys are going to get a look in, get a chance to impress. But I would expect at least a 2-goal win at Aberdeen on Wednesday night and just get Celtic continue motoring on the same direction they've been in since that loss at St Johnstone. Since then, it's been pretty consistent. We're down a good few players at Ibrox, got a one each draw, and you can look forward to the next three games. I'll say that.
It's funny you should mention Jamesy. The famous name is running out of time to get his goal. You think he's going to get it?
It's 50-50. If we get a penalty in one of the league matches, I'm trying to think, it's been a bit of a while since we got a penalty in the league. So we'll see if that happens. But I wouldn't rule him out. As I say, he could come off the bench and he might be keeping it for Hampden. But probably St Mirren at home is a more likely one. But he's well capable of it. It's the longest non-scoring run in his career. And he had a decent chance coming off the bench against St Johnstone. He missed that, and just it seems as if there's a bit of pressure building. Maybe teammates are trying too hard to line it up for him. Maybe he's trying too hard. He had a decent shot on Saturday against Hibs. Keeper saved well, and then he pulled back for offside. But I still think he's well capable of it. He'll be involved in the last three matches, so fingers crossed he gets his goal before he goes to Hampden.
What about you, Eric? You think he's going to get it?
Like Joe said there, possibly. I think he has it in him definitely to get the goal because, but like it'll be interesting to see if a penalty does happen along the way, whether or not he'll be chosen to take it. But he certainly, look, he has the skill, he has the trickery on his day to be able to, you know, I mean, he runs the defences and if he may, you know, make some chances for himself in the upcoming games and has a good couple of those, you know, incisive runs that he has, there's every chance that he could score one. I'd love to see it. If there's anybody who deserves it, he does, you know, because he's been a fantastic servant to the club. He's just been amazing. And he's evergreen. I mean, he still looks like a 22-year-old, you know, the guy doesn't seem to age at all. But yeah, I think he has it in him. It'd be brilliant if he got it in the cup final. That would just be, that would be the icing on the cake for him this season anyway, to be able to do that. So, look, here's hoping, but I do think he definitely has a goal in him. You know, he's been over the course many, many times. So, you know, if he gets the chance, I think he'll take it and he'll get that goal.
Good stuff. I see one of the comments says, "No other Scottish teams are finishing second. They're all garbage." Well, that brings us to the title of tonight's podcast. We don't always explain these titles as much as we should, but this one kind of speaks for itself. There's one of my favourite films, a film called Glengarry Glen Ross. It's about a bunch of salesmen, sad sacks who are just without a hope in hell. And at the start of the movie, Alec Baldwin comes in to give them a pep talk, and it's one of the most astonishing 8-minute monologues that's ever been filmed. He's only in a movie for 8 minutes and he steals the whole film. From a stellar cast of characters, and he steals the whole movie. And he tells the sales team that they're changing the sales contest for that month. That first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired. And we were talking earlier online on WhatsApp about whether or not that should be the motivational tool for every other club in the Premier League outside of Glasgow. See, my thinking on this is that third place has become a bit safe. And third place is now the target for almost every team in this league. There are so many managers who basically don't have difficult high-pressure jobs in this league any longer. They've got feather beds. They're told that qualifying for Europe is enough, right? And I was looking at the league table this afternoon when I was doing a piece on, when I was doing my Aberdeen piece, and I mentioned this at the bottom. The Ibrox club's lost, has dropped points in 15 games out of 36 this season. 15 games. And they are still miles ahead of the team in third. Now, Hibs have had the rain spell the same as Aberdeen. And the Hibs season and Aberdeen's season is sort of the reverse images of each other. Because Hibs had the absolutely dreadful start and nobody was sure if Eddie Gray would even survive it. And all of a sudden, he's got the team playing football. David Gray, he's suddenly got the team playing football. And they're playing well and they're doing a good job. And suddenly, they've climbed the table and they're in a good position. Hearts have had a bit of a nightmare of a season. But that comes, I think, from the place where the Hearts manager starts the season, always starts the season, knowing that third place is good enough. And if you get third place, or you maybe reach a cup semi-final, that's you done enough. That's you got your job. But when the team in second place can drop points in 15 games, and there's still nobody within touching distance of them, that's when you know that we've got a serious problem here. So are we in a place now in Scottish football where the teams under Celtic should have a bit more, all the teams under Celtic, short of the lot from across town, should have a bit more ambition, and where third place is no longer a feather bed, but third place gets you sacked? Joel, what about you?
Third place does get you sacked. Barry Robson took Aberdeen to third place and he was gone soon after. I think Hearts were third last season and Naismith was gone. So clubs can't cope with being third. If you finish third, the chances are you're going to be involved in European group stage matches, and they just don't have the resources. They don't have the squads to cope with that. And there's a bit of expectation. I don't think anyone's finished third in consecutive seasons. If somebody finished third in consecutive seasons and get two seasons of UEFA money from being involved in group stage matches, they might be able to do something to strengthen their squad. But it's not going to change. Tony Bloom, whoever, it's going to be shots each. Aberdeen, Hearts and Hibs can probably rotate at finishing third. And that's the limit of their ambitions.
That's the problem.
It's not a problem. It's reality. They don't have squads. Anyone that's good enough at any of these clubs is going to be transferred at the end of the season. It's not as if you can build things over two or three seasons. Half the teams in the SPFL Premiership are making about 8 changes every summer. Anyone decent is moving on elsewhere. So there's no continuity. Kilmarnock finished fourth or fifth last season. I think Kilmarnock finished fourth last season. They're bottom six this season. It's just the way of it. It's musical chairs. The Hearts, Hibs, Aberdeen will probably rotate between third. The others, they're looking to finish sixth. St Mirren, great success. They've been in the top six 3 seasons running. They've got a chance of getting into Europe. But it's not particularly going anywhere. That's them close to their ceiling. It's not as if Stephen Robinson probably won't be at St Mirren next season. The better players will be gone, and that's the cycle of it. It's wishful thinking on your part, James, that these teams can improve and push on. But Celtic, unless Peter Lowe and Neil Lennon combine together again, you'd expect Celtic to be hitting over 90 points in each of the next couple of seasons.
Yeah.
The mob from Ibrox, they'll be hitting somewhere between 70 and 80, and the rest will be the rest. So, full marks for your out-of-the-box thinking, but I think this time next year and the year after, it'll be a pretty similar story. If David Gray finishes third this season, the chances are he'll be gone before Christmas next year. I think he's got some special status at Hibs. Barry Robson and Stephen Naismith, they've finished third. They've not survived much. I think Robson was gone the following January and Naismith was gone in autumn time. So, Cynical Joe says, forget it.
No. I mean, you're right about both of them, right? But they didn't finish third and then lose their job at the end of the season. Like, right at the end of the season. Third is not good enough. You're terminated. Bye-bye. Right? I just look at the league table and I think, the team in second place has dropped points in 15 matches. 15! You telling me that there isn't a single side in our league who can cobble together enough results and put together a good enough squad to finish better than that, to do better than that?
They've shown season after season. I don't know what the highest points total is for a third place team, but it's probably somewhere
that's
in the 60s.
So it
just doesn't happen. If you finish third, you'll have 8 games against teams from Glasgow. That's possibly 6 or 7 matches that you're not going to get points from. So that's the way of it. But over to Eric. Interject, Eric.
Oh, I'll interject, all right. Just on Hibs, for starters, I think if you look at the form that David Gray has kind of, the form that he's seeing the season out in, if he can carry that into next season, that momentum into next season with a bit of squad building, a couple of decent transfers in the summertime, rather than letting players go, then I feel that Hibs may be in a position to push on and challenge. If they hadn't had such a poor start to this season, they would definitely be challenging for that second place. There's no two ways about it. If David Gray had been able to find that form early on in the season and continued it. But look, that's the way it's gone for him. He's found his form late in the season and he's made that surge for third place. But the form has been very good. Obviously, we beat them on Saturday, but he went to Ibrox and he won at Ibrox. So he's proven that he can come to Glasgow and he can get points in Glasgow. So I feel with a bit of investment in the summertime, maybe they could challenge if they can keep that kind of momentum going. I did an extensive piece on Friday evening about Hearts and about the Tony Bloom investment, or the, you know, that obviously has to go to a vote with the Hearts fans on the 26th of this month. They're voting whether or not to take that 10 million from him and make him a 29% shareholder, which will make him the biggest shareholder at Hearts if he's at 29%, similar to Dermot Desmond, who's on 24%, I think, with us, isn't it? So he's gonna, I looked a fair bit at Tony Bloom himself, and when you look at what he's done at Brighton and where he took Brighton from, that's a fairly big success story in terms of what he did in the EPL. However, it's a different story in Scotland. But he did make a comment, and I thought it was a very valid comment that he said about Hearts. He said that Hearts have a lot of uncapped potential. So when you look at that from the perspective that the Ibrox side, and you look at the takeover that's going on there, all potential is capped at Ibrox. Whereas, yeah, I don't think all potential is capped at Tynecastle. There's probably, if Bloom invests this 10 million and he starts, you know, he becomes the majority shareholder there and he starts investing further into the team, if he believes that Hearts have potential and they have uncapped potential, then maybe he'll start putting money into the club. Maybe he'll start, you know, if he's the majority shareholder, he'll probably have bigger sway and he'll have more shots. He'll be able to call more shots in terms of what goes on at the club. And I said, maybe you shouldn't be looking at the takeover at Ibrox, but instead looking at what's going on at Hearts. And maybe, look, it's a long shot, but I'm willing to put it out there now that you might see a different Hearts next season. But look, it's down to the fans. The fans have to vote for this. And look, I guess they'd be foolish not to. I read an article in the Edinburgh Evening News, and like that article is saying, like, the fans of Hearts would be very foolish not to vote for this 10 million investment from Tony Bloom. Now, you also have Tony Bloom's Star Lizard, you know, this analytics system that he has, that's already in place at Hearts. And Critchley was supposed to have tried to use that, and we saw how that went. That project didn't really work. Now, I'm already in the midst of an article where I'm saying, if Derek McInnes is the extent of your ambition, then third place is going to be the extent of your ambition. Because he's not. he doesn't have the best. He's not going to get the better of Brendan Rodgers. He can't. He's proven he can't. And if you look at the head-to-heads between himself and Brendan Rodgers, he's got a couple of results off Brendan Rodgers, but Brendan Rodgers is miles ahead of him. And whoever they get in at Ibrox, he probably won't challenge them either. I mean, if Tony Bloom is looking at on-cap potential at Hearts, then they need to be looking at a manager who's going to not guarantee third place and, like you said, be challenging. You know, and for me, Derek McInnes is not your man. And the reason I say that is Derek McInnes had the opportunity when he was at Aberdeen for 8 years, when Celtic were probably at their weakest during the absence of the Ibrox side. You know, Celtic weren't very strong under Ronnie Dyla. Let's call a spade, right? Ronnie Dyla did a lot of building there, but that was a perfect opportunity for Derek McInnes to really challenge Celtic at that time. And he couldn't. He didn't rise to the challenge. He had that opportunity and he did not rise to that challenge. This guy has been managing since he took over St. Johnstone in the 2008-2009 season. He's been in the Scottish Premiership, SPFL, since then. 17 years, he's won one trophy. One major trophy, if you look at the League Cup that he won. However, he did win the championship. That's fair enough. He won that trophy. But that's not really significant in the overall scheme of things. So if McInnes is the extent of their ambition, well, forget it. It's third place. If Tony Bloom, but it's looking more and more likely it's going to be McInnes. So if Tony Bloom has ambition for the club, I wouldn't think that Derek McInnes is his ambition. But the fact of the matter is he's not the major shareholder yet. And that won't happen until the 26th. So it'll be up to Anne Budge and her cronies to decide who the manager is going to be. And I think this is just, I don't see this guy, Derek McInnes, achieving anything. I mean, he's flirted with relegation this season with Kilmarnock. I honestly don't see him as the way forward for that team. And I will guarantee now, if Derek McInnes gets that job, they'll finish third next season. And it'll be third and he'll be in his comfort zone. But that's what you've said, James. Anybody who's looking to finish third is in a comfort zone, and they shouldn't be in that comfort zone. They should be going in there. Like, who sits down with a manager and says to the manager when they're taking them, we third is about the best we can do. So that's what we expect to get from you. What club that has ambition sits a manager down and says, we expect you to finish third? You're a capital city club, right? They're a capital city club, and they should be challenging. They should be pushing harder. I mean, I just, it's 1986 since they brought it to the final day of the season. 40 years nearly. You know, so yep. Where's the challenge going to come from? I don't know. I genuinely don't know. But I did think on Friday evening before the whole, Derek and McInnes thing started to get more and more solid, that, if Tony Bloom got heavily involved with the club, he would start investment in the club that would make them a challenger. Well, at least to break the duopoly in some way and maybe push into second place and build from there. But Derek McInnes is not the man to do that. No way.
The funny thing about McInnes is that if Bloom's going to be the main player there, I don't see how McInnes fits into that at all. As Strangelove has just said there, he is not a modern football manager. That nobody is going to say, like Bloom's whole thing is about, as you say, using analytics and stuff like that. There's no evidence that McInnes will fit into a system like that. There's no way of knowing whether McInnes will even accept a system like that. I mean, McInnes could get the job in the next week. Bloom could get elected onto the board and do his power grab, and then find that the two of them are totally incompatible with each other, but McInnes is sitting there on a 3-4 year contract. I think it's madness to appoint McInnes. McInnes looks like a safe option. That's the thing. Yeah. And you don't want any of these teams playing it safe. It's going to take someone taking a risk. And I would think that Bloom would want to be a progressive manager and somebody who's going to fit into what he's trying to do. I actually think that the whole analytics-led system is insanity as far as Scottish football is concerned. Anyway, the idea that they're going to try at Ibrox makes me filled with happy thoughts, I have to admit. because I don't see how it's going to work in this league. I mean, I read Moneyball a few years ago, and like every other Michael Lewis book, it's excellent and it's full of really bizarre wee bits of information. But I also watched a documentary on the Moneyball strategy and what it's done to baseball since the book came out and then the film. And it's upended baseball, but not in the manner that the guys who formulated the plan believed that it would. What's happened is that the big ball clubs have completely dominated using the Moneyball strategy. They're the ones who can hire the best analysts, and they're the ones who've got access to the best info, and they've just hoovered up all the talent. Even players they would never have signed before, they're now taking chances on, and they can narrow it down to the minutest point. And I mean, some clubs have been very successful doing it, and some clubs haven't. But a Premier League club that can spend whatever it wants on building the best analytics department money can buy, you're just not going to get that at Hearts. You're not going to get that. And I don't understand how that is going to work in a multi-club model in the first place. It's like the idea, and just to head into takeover, fakeover territory for a wee minute, this idea that Red Bull are going to come in and be this like revolutionary force at Ibrox, right? Well, I don't even see how the Red Bull hookup with Leeds works or how it could work, because if Red Bull are lending Leeds their analytics expertise, they're only lending them up to a point, because Leeds are a potential competitor for top players. We are the Red Bull clubs. And you think that the Red Bull team would want the best information kept in-house? They're not going to share that with Leeds. They're certainly not going to share it with another club further down the trough. So it's mad to me to think that that's going to happen. And whichever version Hearts get of Tony Bloom's analytics system, it won't be the same one that operates at Brighton, if for no other reason that Brighton do not want to be sharing their player database with anybody else. It's, there you go, the Aldi version of Hearts, exactly. It's exactly what it will be. It'll be the cheap version. The same as the Ibrox club will get a cheap version of whatever it is that Leeds have. Because you don't want these clubs having access to your best info and your best analysis. It makes no sense to do that, to share that. So the whole data-led thing is bizarre. I agree with Rogers on that one. The data is good as a guide, but to actually build a team using decimal points and data blocks, I don't think that will work. I don't think it can.
It's not compatible.
I'll tell you what definitely won't work. Putting a system like that in place and then hiring a manager who can't work within it or doesn't understand it. Mental. Crazy. Joe, what were you? Sorry.
Sitting there. We have a troll.
There's no comparison between Brighton, USG and Hearts. Scottish football is an absolute backwater. To think that there's some systems that you can operate in Belgium, France, Germany, Switzerland, wherever, then you just replicate that in Scotland is madness. So it takes unique characters, it takes hammer throwers, it takes animals, all sorts of things to succeed in Scottish football. And the thought of just turning Hearts into the Scottish version of USG, it's not going to wash. And I'm not sure the dynamics of it, but Derek McInnes is a good fit for Hearts. He got Aberdeen playing miles better than Aberdeen are playing this season. He was in three finals out of five against Brendan Rodgers. When Steven Gerrard was in charge at Ibrox, he beat them in a League Cup semi-final, and then he beat them in the Scottish Cup tie at Ibrox. So McInnes has got a very good record against that lot. And at Hearts, he could probably go quite close to them. Depends how much they're going to fall next season. They won't be anywhere close to Celtic, but McInnes could well have Hearts in a clear in third place or having a good scrap with Hibs and possibly pushing towards second. But nothing's going to change drastically. These teams, they've all got to play Glasgow clubs eight times a season, and the chances are they might only get points in two or three of those matches. So that's a big chunk of the season gone. So I'll watch it with a little bit of interest, but it's not going to change our world in any direction.
No, probably not.
Can I just make a point there, guys? A lot of talk there about Aldi. You know, I worked for Aldi for 5 years, and they're the most efficient company you have ever seen in your life. If you want to talk about German efficiency, they're the boys. All right, so like, lot to be said for Aldi.
I see we've got one of the trolls on tonight. Can only be, any imagine talking about our club on a Celtic fan podcast? We also talked about
one mention.
We also talked about Aberdeen. We also talked about Hibs. So fuck off, you goon. Sorry about that, guys. Speaking of goons, that's what's up next. I'm glad someone mentioned it earlier on the podcast, because this weekend coming is going to be trophy presentation day. And the boys are going to have their usual party in the Tron Gate, in spite of a lot of local niggling and moaning and bitching about it. As an RCLX said today, the council had an entire year to put a plan in place for this and haven't done it. Can't be bothered doing it. And as if it's not bad enough to know how completely unprepared they are with a year's notice and a pretty good idea who was going to win the league. They're also allowing an orange parade on the same day in the same area, which my old man told me a couple of weeks ago, and he told me to check it out and make sure it was accurate. He was 100% sure on it, but he told me if you don't quite believe it, check it out, make sure it's accurate. And it went right out of my head. It's one of the things I heard that sounded so unbelievable. I just went, nah, can't possibly be true, and it's true. And it's nuts. It's mental. Somebody actually either didn't look at a calendar or did look at a calendar and thought, that'll be fun. Get us on the 10 o'clock news. Get our city on the 10 o'clock news. It's hard to know even where to start with a screw-up that size, if indeed it is a screw-up, and know somebody who is looking to recreate World War Z. Eric, can you even believe that? Can you even believe that they're going to do that?
No, I mean, I kind of saw it mentioned in passing, like yourself. I didn't take too much notice of it. I didn't think, you know, that it was going to be clashing with what we're planning to do on the Tron Gate, you know, and it's utter insanity. I mean, what kind of brain-dead individual actually signed off on this and said that it's a good idea? Because, like, the guys, whatever about our fans, the guys in the Orange March are just going to be out for trouble, and they're going to be out to cause, they will have no other intention but to cause hassle and to break up anything that we're doing and destroy anything that we're trying to do on the day. And if you want to provoke a really bad situation, that's one way to go about it. But to actually permit something like that to go ahead, knowing full well what the outcome or what the likelihood of the outcome was going to be, it's just, it beggars belief. It's nuts. I can't wrap my head around it at all. And, you know, what I can't understand is why weren't Police Scotland consulted on this? Why weren't they? I mean, you would think that somebody in Police Scotland would say, no, guys, no, this is not. Because it's going to cost them an awful lot of resources to even try and control what will go on. And that's taxpayers' money. That's, to me, it's just, I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it. I can't wrap my head around the person who thought it was a good idea. And I can't understand how Police Scotland have just not interjected and said, not a fucking hope. Just cancel it. You know?
Well, this is the thing. I might have been a bit harsh on Police Scotland when I wrote the initial article on this. But I'm not sure that I'm getting it 100% right what I've read today. But it seems as if that Police Scotland just got dumped this in the lap and told, oh, by the way, this is happening on the same day. Deal with it. Which would be even more incomprehensible. You would think that Police Scotland would have the power, the authority, just to turn and say,
yeah,
this isn't happening. Guys, just forget about this. This is not happening. But it sounds to me, based on what I read today, that they just got it dumped in their lap and all, told to get on with it. Which, that's just, like, mind blown. Joe, what about you? What do you think of this? I mean, it's... I used to think that I was beyond being surprised by stuff that happened in this city, but this one genuinely has shocked me.
I'm not surprised. Glasgow welcomes Orange Marches every weekend. I would be amazed if you went through the calendar through May, June, July, August, and there are any Saturdays where there are no Orange Marches in Glasgow. I think there's stats that there's more Orange Marches in Glasgow than there are in the north of Ireland. Orange Marches are part of Glasgow's tradition. It should not be. It should never have been allowed. But in 2025, you try and dress it up now, and it's a festival of this, that, and the next thing. Everyone and their granny knows exactly what it is. It's a festival of hate. It wouldn't be permitted towards any other part of society. But in Glasgow, I remember when Graham Souness was appointed as manager at Ibrox, there was a suggestion that Catholics might be getting signed. And outside Kilbowie Park, they were speaking to some Rangers supporters, and it was, we've got war traditions. Glasgow can't shake off these traditions. So that's a staple part of the Glasgow diet. I'm sure the shopkeepers and business owners would happily see the back of them. Let them march around Ibrox every Saturday through the summer. Get on with that. But it's not surprising. The timing is slightly out. They're going early, and the crowds from Celtic will be a bit later. But there will be Celtic fans travelling from Central Station, going along Argyle Street and then into London Road and Gallowgate, that they might be going early and they might be getting caught up in this. But it doesn't surprise me in the slightest. There's never been a place in society for these cave dwellers, and certainly in 2025. I don't think there's any orange walks in Aberdeen. I think last year or the year before, they tried to have a march in Stonehaven, and there was tons and tons of objections, and the council said, we're not bringing your West of Scotland poison up to Aberdeen. So it's an issue for Glasgow City Council, and elected representatives will not touch it, because it's, well, the Orange Order is a very small number. There's very few of them around. They're maybe at 20% of what they used to be. Their headquarters in Bridgeton, I think, has been sold and various other things. So they're nothing like the influence that it used to be. But as with most matters, whether it's Labour, whether it's SNP or anyone else, the elected representatives are cowards. They won't stand up to the Orange Walks, and they won't permit once a year or twice a year some sort of celebration from a properly established city business, Celtic being successful, supporters being happy and wanting to spend money. And again, like most of our arguments, I think we could be having the same discussion again this time next year, because next year there'll be orange marches in Glasgow every Saturday through the summer months, and again in 2027 and 2028, until someone says, wait a minute, let's draw a halt to this. Leave it behind, just like chimney sweeps and having kids working in factories. There's no place for it in 2025.
Here, brother. Well said. It's one of the things that you hear it and you think to yourself, there's no way that can possibly happen. Because as you said, Joe, that the get out that they're trying in the media is that it takes place earlier than the game. As if there won't be fans travelling to the game, as if people who are only going to be at the game won't be gathering at, you know, the various pubs in the Trongate and the Candlewriggs area where, you know, they're going to be watching it or whatever. It's a recipe for disaster, and it's almost as if disaster's what they want to have. I mean, the guys online there are saying that the permits don't have to be in 6 weeks before, and that Police Scotland are consulted at every stage. Well, if that's true, then this isn't just the council dropping the ball. This is everybody. Not so much dropping the ball as just booting the ball through the nearest window. It's mental. And James Robertson's asked who'll be blamed when it kicks off. We know. But you know what? That's unacceptable, because the Celtic fans have done this, 3 years in a row now, and there's not been any widespread hassle. So what's the added element this year? What would the added element be? It's nothing to do with us. We won't cause the problem. The problem will be caused for us. It just seems to me like that's what the whole intent behind it is. It's barmy. Absolutely barmy.
Well, like the intent, James, the intent is behind it because people, exactly what James Robertson has said there, we know we'll be blamed. They know that their march will go ahead, and when the hassle kicks off, which will be instigated by them, our fans will be blamed if they get involved, and they will escape any blame. And it'll all be about, and what you'll hear, and I can guarantee it, and I'll preempt it right now, what you'll hear is we were innocently marching along, doing our march, and then the Celtic fans attacked us. And you'll get all the Sun and the rest of those fucking rags who will go out there and they'll literally print every story they can negative about Celtic, saying that Celtic instigated any hassle that happens on the day when it will have been the total opposite. We all know that. We can preempt it right now.
I mean, what's equally evident is that there is an opportunity here for some of the hand-wringers if all this goes tits up and it ends in a major incident, to turn and say, well, this is what happens when you've all these Celtic fans gathering in this area to celebrate like this, and obviously we can't permit this again next year, and we're off and running. And that seems to me to be part of the calculation as well, to provoke enough trouble that it justifies an outright ban next year. It's been making me nuts since I heard it. Since it got confirmed yesterday, I've just been banging my head against the wall on it. It's one of those things. Speaking of banging my head against the wall and things that are almost too unbelievable to be true, a certain Sunday Mail journalist, if we're going to use that expression, and I use it only in the loosest possible term, and that he has an NUJ card still, presumably, wrote a piece yesterday which kind of shocks you with how blatant and ridiculous it is. He has said that the Ibrox club owes Graham Souness an apology for the identity theft of using his, of the Union Brats using his picture on the banner last weekend. That apparently is the more serious offence than suggesting our fans should be shot. Joe, what do you think of that?
I don't care. So what? He's an old man that's looking for attention. He's a week late with the news. The story was done to death last week. If that's how we want, if the Sunday Mail, Daily Record want to pay him for that, good luck. I'm not upset. I'm not insulted. I wasn't upset. I wasn't insulted with their banners. I don't care. It's water off my back. It's of no interest. I'm not fuming, raging, snarling. Who cares? Over to you, Eric.
How do I follow that? I did an article on it yesterday. And the only point that I wanted to make was that this was all faux outrage from said journalist whose name I refuse to actually repeat as well now, because I don't want to be giving the guy airtime. But no, I mean, when you actually look at what he did in his article yesterday, he was trying to put his own decrepit spin on it to try and be different from what we had read throughout the week. And his spin on it was that Graham Souness should be afforded an apology and all of this. And he's the real victim. All I said was that I'm sure when Graham Souness saw that, he was like, oh yeah, thanks guys, I love it. You know, and that's literally, I mean, I said in the article that I wrote that this is the guy who couldn't even bring himself to say the name of the Celtic captain at one point. He hates us that much. He would be absolutely reveling, you know, that Tifo. So for that muppet, that absolute muppet to say that he'd be offended by it, it's just like, this guy just does not know how to read the room. He just makes it up as he goes along and thinks, You know, I don't even ascribe to what Joe's saying, in that I believe that the guy, there's no thought process goes into what he's saying. He's not trying to provoke anything. He's just fucking dick. You know, so I don't think he actually has the brain cells to be malicious. He just wants to be different or put his own spin on something, and it just results in crap like we saw yesterday. I mean, I pointed out that the Tifo in 2019, the one of Eddie the Head from Iron Maiden, trampling all over the blood and guts of Celtic supporters. I didn't see anybody complaining about that or saying, you know, anything whatsoever about that. We all know that the only bloody reason that anything was ever said about this Tifo was because they're just afraid it would scare the living shit out of the Yanks. That's it. That's the only reason there was ever anything said about it. But for your man to say that, that Craig Souness is owed an apology, I mean, it's so far out of touch. It's like I said, like he had to go into, you know, the two interviews that he did with Graham Souness in 1989 and in about 25 years ago. And Suey, like they were on first name, you know, for their best of buds. You know, honest to God, like, this guy is so out of touch. He's such a dinosaur. It's time for him to just pack it in. Like, that's all I can say. Pack it in. Do yourself a favor and put yourself out of your misery and pack it in.
Oh, dear. I have to say, I do disagree with you on this one, Joe. This stuff fucks me off, right? It genuinely really does. All of it does. All of it. I mean, I was listening to the Spears podcast the other night when he was discussing the banner with a couple of our other esteemed hacks. And the general attitude that they weren't personally offended and they didn't quite get the furore and all that, just infuriated me, and I left a really pissed off message about it, because, as I always say in the articles, the perspective is slightly different when it's your blood they're up to their knees in, and that's where these guys don't get it and don't see it. And our new contributor Paulina, who I think may join us on this podcast next week for 5 minutes, but will definitely join us on the cup final one. She wrote a piece from the perspective of someone who is kind of new to all this. And she lives in Poland, and she watches all our games now, and has become a huge Celtic fan, as well as having like a real cultural love for Glasgow. She couldn't believe it. And the first question that she asked is, what exactly is that? And the second question is, why did they get away with that? Why is it allowed? Right? And that's the only question that really counts. Why is it allowed? Because this is hatred. That's all it is. It's Graeme Spears trying to put it down to ultras being ultras. And I said in the post that I left that it's basically hateful bastards just being hateful bastards. That's what it is. There's nothing cultural about this. It's not ultras being ultras. This is just people who are steeped in hatred, indulging their hatred. That's it. That's all it is. And that's where the conversation should have been focused. And they're pretty stunned that there's been any furore at all. They're pretty stunned that their club is criticising them, that some sections of the media have mentioned it and said it's out of order, and they're amazed at this discussion that's suddenly happening around it. We know why the discussion's happening. The discussion's happening because the Americans are watching, and the Americans are getting antsy and don't want to be involved in anything like this. But the 2019 banner is worse, as you said, right? And I put the 2019 banner as the main image on the article I wrote about this, because it's objectionably worse by quite a considerable degree. I mean, that's got a bloodied sword and a dead Celtic fan in it. And no one said a word at the time. So if these guys are baffled that suddenly this has generated this big controversy, I can understand why they're baffled. They get away with this stuff all the time. No one cares. No one ever brings it up. No one ever mentions it. No one offers a word of criticism. And I'm just sick of it. I'm just fucking sick of it. I just don't know how much longer we can go on like this, or how much longer we should be expected to go on like this. No other ethnic or social group in this country would have to stand for this repeatedly, week after week. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. And so I do get pissed off about it, and I do get quite hit up about it quite a lot. Flag Day at the weekend. My God. What are your thoughts on that, guys? Joe first. Joe, you go first, mate.
I would expect a three or four goal victory. I think they'll look to sign off in a bit of style. They've had a fantastic home record this season and going for all sorts of records. Brendan's been looking through the record book to try and find things for them to do. So yeah. It's the most home goals, the most goals since the Lisbon Lions, this, that and the next thing. But it would be unnatural for them to take their foot off the accelerator. It's full steam ahead, and St Mirren might have something to play for, but they won't be taking anything away from Celtic. Last season, there'd been a big build-up. The league was quite tight. We beat Phil Clement's mob at Celtic Park, then won the league at Kilmarnock, and then the players partied something silly. They were dragged out of Wunderbar to turn up and play against St Mirren on Saturday, and they sneaked it with a 3-2 win. But I think it'll be much more professional this time, and a standard 3 or 4 goal home victory. Hopefully no injuries. A goal for Forrest, a goal for Adam Ida, a goal for Kasper Schmeichel perhaps. But it should be fairly routine. It should be a right good day. The weather's good, and we won't let those marchers interfere or take the shine off anything. All we're going to do is inflict more pain on those marchers. They should be watching their own team through Easter Road. I don't know if Sky are showing that match. I don't know if they've got two Scottish games on. They're certainly showing our game, and that's our concentration. Round off the season, the league season, with a good performance, lots of good pictures, trophy in the park, all the rest of it, and then we can look forward to hopefully clinching our sixth treble in 9 years the following weekend at Hampden. So all routine and boring, excitingly boring, please.
Yeah, I'll subscribe to that as well. I reckon I'm going to call it here now. I would say we're going to win 5-0. 2 for Adam Ida, 1 for Nicholas Kuhn, 1 for Dyson Maeda, and 1 for James Forrest. And that's it. That's what I'm saying. And it'll be a good trophy day, good win, and everybody be delighted, out celebrating afterwards, and then the Orange March will come along and shit hit the fan.
Yeah, I'll settle for that. Particularly the James Forrest goal, I think everybody would love to see him get one at Celtic Park to close off his season and to keep his record going. It would be equal good if he saved it for the cup final, but we'll get to the cup final next week. So, guys, thank you very much for joining us again, and thank you to my two colleagues here for coming along. And
just before we go, James, I just want to give a shout-out to our ex-player, Colin Healy. Colin Healy has just taken over our local League of Ireland club, Kerry FC, here at home, and I want to wish him all the best. He has a lot of work ahead of him. Kerry have only just started out in 2022 as a new League of Ireland club. He has a tough task ahead of him. But for Kerry, it's a big coup to land somebody like Healy, because Healy was the Cork City manager for 3 years. He was also involved in the Ireland ladies team as well. And he obviously, we're playing Cork City in the summer friendly. So he's bringing a lot of experience to Kerry FC, and it's a serious coup for them to land somebody like Colin Healy. So I want to wish him all the best. And you never know, our club chairman has good contacts with the club. He might be able to get him on the show for us at some point. So if we can organise that, I'll talk to the lads and see what they can do. We also have a Glaswegian player playing in defence, Chris McQueen from East Kilbride. He's from Joe's neck of the woods. So Chris has done very well since he joined the club. He's been a stalwart in defence. So, and our Celtic Supporters Club sponsors his jersey as well. So, yeah, just want to wish Colin all the best. And hopefully he had a debut win anyway, his first game in charge. Even though he had to serve a touchline ban, his first game in charge, they beat Treaty United 1-0. So a great start for Colin Healy at Kerry FC. So that's my piece on that.
I think we'd all like to wish him all the best in that job. That's excellent, mate. Thanks for that. So, guys, if you liked what you heard tonight and you like what we do in general, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share, and tell all your friends about us. And we will be back next week with our show on Trophy Day and our preparation for Cup Final Day and the treble, hopefully, to follow. So, guys, thank you very much again.
Okay. Hail, hail, guys. All the best till next week. Talk then. Bye-bye.